On May 12, 1986, 20 years ago this week, I started producing For the Birds as a volunteer at KUMD in Duluth. It's interesting to consider the changes in bird life since then. Springs are definitely starting earlier now. Ice out is happening sooner, bringing waterfowl and early migrants back more than a week sooner than in the 80s. Neotropical migrants, which have no clue about North American weather conditions down in Central and South America, time their returns using day length. Their migration dates aren't so easily changed, though some warblers are coming back earlier. I used to teach an elder hostel at Tree Haven near Tomahawk, Wisconsin, and we were lucky to get one or two species of warblers, or a hummingbird, oriole, or rose-breasted grosbeak before Mother's Day. Now lots of birds are arriving back before then. Canada geese were just starting to nest in towns and cities, and when one city had too many of them, a standard procedure was to trap some and move them to a city that wanted their own geese. Geese have the unusual ability among birds of being able to digest grass, and since people have such a fondness for huge expanses of turf grass, and since hunting isn't allowed in urban areas, geese are finding city life extremely comfortable and far safer than out in wilderness. So as truly wild Canada geese grow rarer, the urban goose population has exploded. Long before I started producing For the Birds, the population of double-crested cormorants had been very high in the Great Lakes. But by the 1970s, DDT, PCBs, and other toxins wiped the species out entirely on Lakes Michigan and Superior. When I saw my first one at Horicon Marsh on August 7, 1976, it was a red-letter day. Now, thanks to the proliferation of fish farms, as well as the banning of DDT in America, their population has rebounded. There's no evidence that there are more cormorants now than historically, but a lot of people find it hard to believe that when fish were most abundant in the Great Lakes, there were much larger populations of fish-eating birds, too. It's easier to blame a big black bird for fish declines than to consider the complex web of factors that are causing the problems, including mercury and other toxins, habitat destruction, and temperature changes in spawning areas, and in some areas, our own overfishing. Back when I started doing For the Birds, I could see large groups of evening grosbeaks virtually every day in Duluth or hereabouts. Now I'm lucky to see them in town once or twice a year, and even in the finer habitat outside the city, their numbers are vastly diminished. I've been studying the situation and believe that the number one reason is the decline in mature hardwoods as we manage more and more boreal forest land for short rotation softwoods. But it's difficult to be certain that the extremely high numbers in the 70s and early 80s had been normal for many decades before that, and I haven't been able to get a hold of data from earlier to prove that the numbers were as common in earlier decades as they were when I first came here, so it's difficult to know what exactly is happening. Ruffed grouse populations are always cyclical, but both the ups and the downs are lower now than they were 20 years ago. American woodcock are also declining. Meanwhile, one animal that shares their open area aspen habitat, the white-tailed deer, is flourishing. I suspect that the success of deer comes directly at the expense of these two ground-nesting birds, both because deer browse a lot of the low plants that provide ground birds food and cover, and also because deer have been proven to eat eggs and baby birds out of ground nests. 20 years later, we have more cardinals, ring-billed gulls, Canada geese, and crows than ever here in the North Woods, along with the declining numbers of a great many songbirds, ruffed and sharp-tailed grouse, and woodcock. A lot of non-urban ducks are also declining. Let's hope in the next 20 years we reverse many of these trends. I'm Laura Erickson, speaking for the birds.